build on what we've seen so far, now we get to one of the real core issues of how things are handled today and how they may be handled or may not be handled in some of the great controversies. Just to recap our story so far, so we've seen that it's not clear whether or not a divorce can be compelled in all circumstances in which, at least let's say, the wife is interested in one. So in the modern day context, when let's assume as a premise that kfiyah is not an option for us, for whatever reason, so what avenues are open to us? So we discussed last week the concept of harchakos de Rabbeinu Tam, which is a good way to refer to basically everything that is short of kfiyah, everything that we do, which we do under the assumption that it does not constitute kfiyah, and therefore does not call into question a get through the issue of get ma'usa, and is considered to be legitimate social pressure, social tactics that are less than the kfiyah standard. So far, so good. So now we have to discuss a major issue. Where does monetary pressure come in? So here, there are a couple of premises to try to figure out and to try to apply. So let's think this through. So why should monetary pressure be considered kfiyah? Why should it not be considered kfiyah, whether misvara, whether based on anything that we've seen so far? How would you categorize it one way or another? What seems to be the defining concepts that make something kfiyah or not? Morty?
Maybe since he has a choice.
Okay, so what we saw that when we talked about Tarchakas to Rabbeinu Tam, and we tried to zero in on what makes it not kfiyah, was there was language in the original Rabbeinu Tam quote that sounded like, well, if he wants to do it, he'll do it. If he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't want to do it. So I guess building on that, what you're saying is that every individual seems to have the option of resisting monetary pressure. And I guess as we alluded to, I think this was the closing note that we had on Thursday night, that this is perhaps the thrust of the Gemara in the second parak Iksubis, where the Gemara says that if somebody claims that he testified falsely by signing a false shtar, so he claims that he did so under duress, so then the question the Gemara has is, well, what kind of duress? If it was onus nefashos, so then, okay, that's real duress. If it was onus machmas mammon, so then he should have resisted. So I guess maybe playing off that, so the suggestion is that monetary pressure is resistible. Is that compelling always? Is there any distinctions maybe to be made? What do you think about that? Is that an absolute? Well, what possible distinctions can you think in general in terms of all, is all monetary pressure equal? Just to throw in a few more makoros here, so there's the Gemara Maseches Moed Katan and Daf Tazayin, where the Gemara talks about all the different tactics that are available to a Beis Din when someone does not comply and when somebody resists their invitation. And one of the things the Gemara mentions there is confiscating his property, which is invoked by some of the Makoros as talking about mammon as a tool, which you have to figure out what the impact of that is. Okay, so we know from there that when an institution wants to compel behavior, so monetary pressure is something they could use to compel behavior. Does that mean that all monetary pressure equals compulsion? Maybe yes, maybe no. What else can you put on the table in terms of how to assess this question? Let's ask the question directly. What is monetary pressure? Practically speaking, what does it mean? Shmuley? Sorry?
Possibly you don't conduct business with him.
Okay, so that's interesting, and you'll see soon that you're in very good company, considering that to be monetary pressure, but that's not necessarily the most obvious example. Anyone want to discuss that example? And again, you'll see you're in very good company with that, but how do you feel? Is that the first example that comes to mind in terms of monetary pressure?
Adding money to the gap.
So that's what Shmuley's talking about, or something else?
I thought you were saying, or you can say
Well, what are you saying?
You're saying that you shouldn't do business with him.
Right.
Meaning to avoid giving him money. I'm saying you should give him money, like additional money,
and
to give a gap.
And what would that be? That would be?
That might be considered on his own.
So it might be considered extortion, which is a whole separate discussion which we will get to. Unfortunately, it's very, very common in the contemporary Gittin environment, and we'll get to that. But Pashto says that's not monetary pressure, because that is a bonus. So if a person has been paid money to give a get, again, is probably an extortionist, and there are other issues to discuss about that. But, excuse me, that the get seems to be unaffected by that. That's not considered necessarily to be a pressurized get. But what Shmuley is talking about, I think, is actually something in between what you just mentioned and what others would more absolutely consider onus. Because Shmuley is talking about an active decision to do business with somebody. So I could do business with whoever I want to. So if I don't do business with you, you're going to say that I'm forcing you to do something. I want to do business with your competitor. We saw that one of the distinctions last week that was made between Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam and Kfiya is that Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam are mostly considered to be withdrawing positives rather than imposing a negative. So maybe one could say, and indeed that certainly comes out as part of the Hachakos to Rabbeinu Tam, that I'm not compelling him monetarily. I'm simply withdrawing the benefits of my friendship, the benefits of my association. I'm choosing not to be involved with him. If he doesn't want to be the kind of person I want to be involved with, fine. So he has the right to live his life, I'll live my life, and that means we won't have any business relationships, but no. So one could see it that way, and again, we'll see soon Shmuley in very good company in considering that onus mammon, but one could say that also doesn't rise to the level of onus mammon. That what Morty said definitely doesn't rise to the level of onus mammon, no offense, and what Shmuley says, arguably so, but maybe even less, not less, but maybe also does not rise to the level of onus mammon. So what else would be more clearly onus mammon?
Fining the guy.
Okay, so basically, Phil, you want to comment on that?
I was just going to ask, can they actually go into his bank account?
Who's they?
Bezdin.
So Bezdin, can they practically in America? Can they halachically?
Halacha,
theoretically, yes.
So that would possibly be a case.
So if that was possible to do, that could be a possible. That's what the Gemara Moed Katan was saying in terms of somebody who resists Bezdin. Right, so theoretically, yes, that that concept could exist. But then if Kfiya is not called for, then that may be problematic. So it would seem like that's a more straightforward example of actual onus mammon, right, of actually taking away money that somebody has. Now, even within that, there could be a couple of nuances, right? So if you say that that's called onus mammon, so, are there any circumstances in which you might see it as less onus? And this is the review we've seen in the past few minutes, right? That giving somebody money doesn't seem to be onus. Choosing not to do business with them is somewhere in the between, a little bit arguable. Taking money away is closer to what we've described as onus. So now let's grant for a second that that would be onus mammon. Taking money away from them and the threat or the possibility of losing money that you have, that would be considered compulsion, coercion. Any factors do you think would mitigate that? Always, anytime you're taking money away from her, is there any factors that may make it a little bit less coercive and maybe more within the middle ground of our Harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam kind of activity? Phil?
Well, if he's particularly wealthy.
Okay, so particularly wealthy meaning what? Therefore that...
I don't know how much this fine is worth.
Okay, well, maybe you're going back to Morty's original point, right? That Morty's point was that monetary penalty is not considered to be coercion, maybe, because you could choose to withstand it. Well, maybe HVH, right? So what can we choose to withstand? So maybe it depends who you are, what you can choose to withstand. Or alternatively, maybe it depends how much. Right, so that's also something that we'll have to figure out, right? Maybe money should not all be put in one pot, and maybe it depends. There's all kinds of different degrees. There's money that is, as we know from other contexts, right? There's life-changing money and there's non-life-changing money. So maybe that's going to be a factor. Now, why should that be a factor? So one reason might be because, again, there's amounts that you can swallow and there's amounts that you can't swallow. So maybe that's the whole issue. You know, can you essentially say no when faced with such a number? Or it might be a definition that's more relevant specifically to the get issue. And that's something that we'll see also. Okay, so amounts might make a difference. What else might make a difference? Any other thoughts? Well, as we'll see, it might matter how we're taking away the money. Like, is the money that is clearly his, that's being removed from him? Is it money that's more arguably his? Is it money that we can make a case legally is not his? All of that is going to be a part of the mix. So this affects a number of contemporary issues because, so Phil asked, do we have the ability to go into his bank account? So whether or not the Beis Din in an autonomous Jewish community had that ability, it's pretty clear in America that we don't have that ability. But what tools do we have, right? So what can you imagine, especially because this is an area in which everyone's been pushed to think creatively. So what tools can you imagine can the Jewish society living, let's say, in America in 2015, in what ways could they possibly impose financial pressure on someone? What tools would they have? Any thoughts? You've been charged with solving this problem. How are you going to do it? What ways could a Jew living in America, it's not necessarily something you could do tomorrow, it might be something that you need quite a lot of effort to set up. Phil?
Maybe like remove scholarship eligibility from like yeshiva tuition or something.
Okay, that might be, right? So maybe they're assuming that somebody is dependent upon certain societal economic structures, then maybe you could affect that. You'd have to be, you know, kind of fortunate enough to have the circumstances work out that that's really something you have control over. It's probably going to be a limited amount of cases where that's true, but certainly on a case-by-case basis, that could come up, right? You could be confronted with that shaila as a rabbi in a scenario. So listen, rabbi, this guy's not giving a get to his wife, and the yeshiva is paying for his four kids, and we think maybe we should stop doing that. What do you think? So certainly on a case-by-case basis, you could get that question. As a matter of a broader strategy, it's not necessarily going to cover too many of the cases. Any other thoughts? What else? What other tools do we have at our disposal?
Going back to the other option of, mm-hmm.
So one thing is to boycott, right? Which seemingly, what Shmuley said essentially, right? If you're not doing business with him, so that seems to be an option, right? And that seems to be an option that is covered under the existing literature about Halakas Rabbeinu Tam. So if that's the case, so it seems like that's already on the books. Maybe it's a question of how much it's employed. And that might lead one to say that if that is Onas Mamon, then maybe Onas Mamon is acceptable within a get scenario, and that's something we'll have to discuss a little bit. But what other tools potentially could there be? I can think of a few. Right, how else could you exert economic pressure on someone in American society? Think out of the box a little bit. But one thing you could do is you could break into his house and steal his stuff. right? But then we discussed that last week, right? For the record, you cannot do this. But just again, this is just thinking, again, cannot do that legally or morally or practically, but just as far as thinking what the different options are, right? So that would be one thing that theoretically could be exertion of monetary pressure. But, as we found, that that's out of bounds for a number of reasons. So what else could you do? Well, one thing you could do is you could try to get legislation that would allow the government to impose some type of monetary penalty. Now, as we'll come to see, that is one of the most controversial types of steps you could take, right? Because if we assume that monetary pressure is called coercion, and now you're placing this coercive tool in the hands of the secular government, you're going to run into a lot of serious shilas there and a lot of serious opposition. What else? You could also theoretically sue someone. How would you make a case that you'd have a lawsuit?
Emotional trauma.
Emotional trauma. There is such a discussion. And emotional pain and suffering. And what would that be considered if you would do that? And then you'd have to figure out, is that a legitimate path? What if you knew it wasn't legitimate? What would that be? What if it was something completely legitimate but completely else? Like, let's say, for example, the husband stole money from the wife somehow. And she is able to sue him in court to get it back. But she says, I'll drop the suit if it gives a get. How does that fit in? So these are all questions that we'll have to try to figure out, but they affect the various get laws that have been on the table, which have different degrees of controversy. And they affect the prenup, which also was subject to much discussion, but as you know, is something that we very strongly recommend here. So just to understand very briefly, because we'll give each one much more detail, but just very briefly, the mechanics of those different concepts. So the New York State get law, there are two get laws. One was in the 1980s and one was in the 1990s. The one in the 1990s is far, far more controversial than the one from the 1980s and the subject of a lot of major discussion. Originally, the first New York get law was basically that the government would not grant a divorce to a husband unless he made sure that all barriers, whatever they might be, to remarriage are removed from his spouse. So in that premise, the husband would basically be encouraged to give his wife a get because he would understand that he's not going to be able to be remarried secularly, he's not going to have any of the benefits of divorce, whatever they are, unless he has allowed his wife to move on with her life. So that is not super controversial. Why not? How does that fit into the framework that we've seen so far? It's basically the government granting him a benefit. So if he wants this benefit, so he chooses to follow through. If he doesn't want to follow through, okay, so the government's not going to give him a benefit. But that's not considered to be any type of a coercive tool, probably. Problem was that it also wasn't necessarily so effective because then the husband could just say, all right, so then I won't get divorced. No, no. Doesn't always necessarily bother him. So the later get law was the idea that the court, when deciding how to divide up the property between the spouses, could factor in whether or not the husband is granting a get to his wife. Now, why is that much more controversial? Because why? What does that essentially suggest? That basically the court could decide, all right, you're not giving a get to your wife, I'll take your house away, give it to your wife. So that could be pretty serious. So that's very, very controversial, as we'll get into more detail, and that's a topic of a lot of debate. How does the prenup work? How does Garcia or Willig's prenup work? Anyone familiar? Okay, you guys are holding from dating. Should be familiar. Okay, Marty.
When you're married to someone, they're like monetary obligation for your husband.
Mm-hmm. Like for example, if anybody was learning Subas this year, for example, right, they might be aware.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right.
So it just enforces those obligations and maybe makes them. I think it enforces those obligations when the spouses are no longer together.
Okay, so that is a lot of it. There's a lot more to say, but what you've said so far is basically true. We have to explain a lot more details. But just before we get into any of the details, so why do you suspect that that might be something that we're comfortable endorsing despite the monetary component? Right, do you sense what might differentiate that from other things?
Is there already like pre-existing obligation?
Okay, that helps. Right, it's one of the things that helps. What else? Shmuley?
More than their pre-existing obligations, they are things that she is owed.
Before this. I mean, it's not.
Right. So therefore, it's not really taking anything away from it.
Right. Now, that is clearly another part of it. Right. It's roughly true. We'll have to discuss to what extent that's true, but that's certainly the concept. Right, so Morty and Shmuley are mentioning two different things, which are both relevant. Right, the fact that the initial agreement, which we'll have to see how much of a scope that has, and what it is we're talking about. We're not talking about randomly taking stuff from him. Right, we're talking about stuff that he is owed to her, perhaps, as a function of the marriage itself. Any other elements that are particularly relevant? All right, so we have to get. We did not give any details yet. That was a very, very, very bare bones discussion of what it is. We have to fill in many, many more details. But and I'll also ultimately tell you that I think there's another component to the prenup which is as crucial to its effectiveness as anything else, which doesn't even involve the monetary component. But keep all those thoughts in mind as we now start to look at this issue a little bit. So, but again, you know, I don't want to, in any sense, be taken out of context. Again, remember that we do endorse the prenup, but to whatever extent there's controversy over the prenup, it has to do with how legitimate is this monetary component and where does it fall within the realm of pressure. So now let's start talking about the topic more from the beginning. So let's assume that it is the case that at least theoretically monetary pressure is considered to be pressure. And that might be the view of most of the Rishonim. It could be there are Rishonim who disagree. There is some discussion to be had. There are those who read pretty much all the Rishonim is saying this. There are those who read other Rishonim is saying something different. But it doesn't really matter that much whether it's all the Rishonim or many of the Rishonim. But it's at least many of the Rishonim. And it's most notably a Tshuva Sarashba that the Poskim quote, the Beis Yosef and others quote, And that the assumption is that we have to at least be choshesh for that, that we have to at least factor in that possibility that the Rashba is correct, or the Rashba is something that we have to worry about, and that it's not right, therefore, to conduct a get that was obtained through ones mamon. Now, again, we have to figure out, so what is considered ones mamon and what isn't? So there is a very important tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, which maybe we'll go through for a few minutes together. Rav Moshe's tshuva is in Eben Ezer, Igros Moshe Eben Ezer. It's Simen Kuf Lamed Zayin. So just to read through parts of it. So he writes, "Abadavar Haisha Shneskarshet Alarav Agon Yosef Dofine in Portland, Oregon." It was a happening place even then. Now, Portland, you know, is a very popular place. Our own Adam Rosenberg is not here right now, but he can be proud of Portland. But in any event, so a get that was a woman who was divorced there, Zeh Kishloshim Shana. That's already like 30 years ago. Venise Selpi gets El Acher, and she was married to someone else based on this get, Vialda Bonos, Vaha Bonos Kvanisul Anashim Ksherim. And then those daughters have already gotten married to Kosher, a wonderful man. And now there are rumors being spread. There is slanderous comments being made on that get. That the husband did not want to give a get. Until he would be given $1,000. Ba'ad mizonoseha, that it came out later that the courts, the civil courts, obligated this man to pay his wife for her support. Lo ratza lite, and he didn't want to give, he didn't want to pay the support. V'asruhu b'maiser, and they put him in jail. Asruhu b'masar. Ad sheite masha chayvu, until he would pay that which they obligated him. This is the giving meiser, not giving meiser, mem ayin sin resh, but mem aleph sam of resh. So it's a different kind of meiser. He's put in jail, and his wife agreed to let him be taken out of the jail bim yitain get, if he should give a get, v'hiskim habal v'nasin get. And the husband agreed, and he gave the get. So maybe that's a compelled get. Maybe he's basically forced. He has no choice under those circumstances. The truth is, I shouldn't talk about this at all. And we should really yell at the person who asked the question in the first place. He was trying to second guess a get that was given many years before in front of a rabbi who was qualified to give gittin. That we should, God forbid, that we should cast any aspersions on such a get that it wasn't done properly. We have to wear also about Chimra Betam. That even though this person didn't know what the story was, and he's allowed to ask, because here we're talking about the Chayrim, that we find that it's wrong to be motzi laz in a get. That if somebody was present at a get, so he's not supposed to later call it into question and therefore start spreading rumors that there's something wrong about the get. So, okay, that technically doesn't really apply. That really applies to people who were there at the time and didn't say anything then, and then they only say something later. Okay, that's what it really applies to. Still, in any event, so anyone who says to the Shoal that he was there at that time and he didn't complain, so then he has the Chayr Ben Atam. But even without the Chayr Ben Atam, so it's still not right for anyone to cast aspersions on a get that was done by a qualified rabbi. Maybe it was done incorrectly. That's not the right thing to imply. And therefore, the husbands of these women The mother and the daughters have nothing to worry about at all. Aval, however, that's his opening statement, that you know the whole discussion is improper. But now let's talk about the issues. That even if the facts were like this kvetch guy was saying, that this heckler is trying to say, the get is still kosher lechachila. Me'achad har kos harelo kafu la'aso b'ma'asar k'day shi'ten get. Right, the courts, they didn't put him in jail in order to make him give a get. Ela shi'ten lo'asach kasef l'mazon osa. They said she's got to give her amount of money for her support. V'ishol ha'ratza li'ten lo ba'ad ha'mazon os nisratza l'garsha. This is all dependent on if he is obligated supporter, hare ein kan onus klal. Then there's no onus at all, because then he really has this debt, and that's what they were trying to enforce. The kevin shirotz lagarsha kadeshi pater mechiyuvo hu ratzon gomer. So if basically he is divorcing her so that he can get out of his existing obligation, so then that's his free choice. That's his total will. And just like somebody who divorces because they paid him money, who get kosher, that's valid. Valid means the get is valid. The guy is still a jerk and probably a ganav and a violation of many different things and an extortionist. But the get is acceptable because he did it in order to profit from the money. So, that's why he gave the get, so his ratz and gomer, and so too, anybody who gives the get in order to get himself out of his obligations. But if he was not obligated to support her, just they obligated him in the support against the din the Torah. The name of she'em b'zeh hadin, t'dina d'malchus adina. And if we're assuming that this is not subject to the rules of Dina de Malchus Adina, O'afim Dina de Malchus Adina, even if there is applicability of Dina de Malchus Adina in this area too, Aval Hayav Ofed Shechayvuhu Gam Shalok Dinam, let's say they did it in such a way that doesn't jive with American law either. Mitzad Kabbalah Shochar Kedoma, let's say somebody paid off the judge, and he therefore gave an inappropriate, illegal, in American sense, illegal obligation of mizonos. So then, that would be a problem. So that's kovde shagazl ishtemena mos. That would be like a case where the wife stole money from him. Ve'eina rotzalach zira mad sheitin laget. And she doesn't want to return the money that she stole until she gets a get. Shabbos Yosef, Hashem Harash Betz, Mistapik Bezet. Beis Yosef has a suffix about that in Huget Musa, whether or not that is a valid get. Batoris Gitin Shamhu Pesri Tshuva, Sovra Pshita, Tevi Onus. And that could possibly be actual onus. Vlo Muva Machor Hachilok Ben Haskira Hu Agerishin, Haskel Begerishin. So there, there's a distinction which she quibbles, which she argues on here, the question of whether the Gerishin was explicitly mentioned, and who mentioned it first in this discussion, where she stole the money from him and now she's not giving it back. Kevin Sheodea Shibishvil Ze Gazla Mos. What difference does it make who mentioned what? We know that that's why she stole the most. But Tzarech Lomar Shemafar Sha'ari Begazla Shlobishvil Gerishin. So maybe the circumstance was that she stole it, stam, not because of any, not because she's trying to get him to give the get. She stole the money because she wanted it. But she'll shiritzona behamos. V'chein b'mafchidos olahavsid mamon hu b'shvil hasina shebezeh machalik de b'hazchira dehivizkira hi achar zman lo mashim titin get achz lochigzeilav lo afsidcha mamon. So maybe that's the situation that now, since he's afraid he's going to lose the money, because they hate each other. So that's why we now have this distinction, right? But that's where it matters. Is she going to say, okay, for the get, I'll give it back to you, and you won't lose? So then if he agrees to that, so then maybe that's the get ba'usa. Because now it's revealed that that's why she ended up stealing it in the first place. And she scared him in the thought of losing it. But if he brings up the Gerishin, she stole the money from him, and he says, you know what? He says, that let's say she stole the money from him, and he says, you know what? If you give me back the money you stole, I'll give you a get. And she agrees to that, so eino get ma'usa. That's not considered to be a forced get. Since he started the conversation about Gerishin, Nikar Shirotze Be'etzim Lagarsha. So what do we see from there? We see that really he wants to divorce her. Amasha Tola Bamos, and the fact that he's connecting it to the money, Hu Mishum Shirotze Gam Lahatzel Ma'osav, is because he also wants to save his money. Uvihi Hischila. Well, if she starts the conversation, that now it becomes clear that it's only because of the Gerishin that she stole the money in the first place, to force him to divorce her. So then that means that he didn't really want to divorce her, and it's only because of the saving of his money that he's divorcing her. That is onus because onus mamon, as we see, is also onus. Okay, so far so good. I'm following. Avalim kein ein hadimyon lahadisikrikon shvinasim laatzmo liftos nafsho having matana oliyafa tahasim abarish kol matanas horak shlo yehargenu mekol makom having matana amadegamze nechshav ratzah. Let's skip a little bit. All right, so we get the basic idea of that paragraph. So, l'chein tzorech lomar. So, therefore, you have to say that the Torah's Gittin, who makes this distinction, the ratzon l'garish b'shvil atzolos m'momono, nami havi ratzon, that somebody who decides he wants to divorce just so he can save his money, but he brings it up, that's still considered to be willing, kevin d'chazina, because we see the hamamon adiflo. We see that he likes his money more than his wife. Last week we talked about your money, your life, right? So this is the other version. This is the combination of Jack Benny and Henny Youngman, your money or your wife. So v'lo nachash lomar dehu merame lomar shmegarsh ritzono. We don't have to worry that he's just lying when he says that he's going to divorce her willingly. V'ha'emes hu shalonis rats, and the truth is that he's not interested in doing it. Mishum she'isha adifalo, because he preferred to have the wife. Kevin d'matzi v'inshi d'hamamon adiflo, because there is such a thing. Right, it does exist among people whose money is more important to them than their wife. Umasha v'hitchila hi begerishin hu get ma'usa, and the reason it's only a problem if she brings it up first, mishum desover the kevin she'onas mama nami u'ona, samirina nami d'chol ma'isav harak mitzad sivuyah, below mitzad ratzanatzmo. Since onas mama does exist, then we're concerned that the whole thing is only because of her instruction, not because of his will. And a forced action won't be considered his action at all. That's like a monkey's action, it doesn't count at all, just like somebody's forcing you with the threat of death. And this, therefore, helps us to understand this conclusion. That happens all the time, but sometimes a woman will cause anguish to her husband through stealing money. Because of that, he will divorce her. No one ever thought that was a get ma'usa. So why is that relevant at all, it would seem? In that case, you divorce her without getting any money back. And if that's the case, it's only because he hates her. That's why he divorces her. So how does that prove anything in terms of somebody who is getting money back that was stolen from him through the divorce? His point is to prove the matzoi b'inchi, that such people exist. That even though he would rather the woman stay married to him, and he's still willing to divorce his wife because of Hefsid Mammon, she Yeshal Moshe Gozel, Smenesh Mammon, Adiflo. The fact that she steals from him, that's enough reason to divorce her because he'd prefer to have the money. V'lachein behahu behu hischil begerishin. So therefore, in a situation where he started the gerishin, af shehu la'atzolos mamono, even though he's doing it to save his money, ein lanu lo mashu l'ramos, we shouldn't say that that is for the purpose of trickery. Rather, he's doing it for the money that he prefers. Achadayim will move on. It's still not understood. Mashakasa, that which he says, Torah's getting v'emi shachash to get meusa, that no one ever thought that was a get meusa. Should have vado l'shach lachash, because they don't want to take it anyway. Kishlo machzeros l'mamun b'shvil ha'getz, he's not giving it back any money either way. Tzarechiyim b'kavanos, I'm not totally sure what the Torah's getting means. Okay, so far so good? Everyone follow, more or less? Any questions? Okay, so this is I'll call upon the Be'uvda Didan. So in our situation, Im haya hamamon shechayvu sheyitein la shaloi kedin, if the money that he obligated himself to give her was shaloi kedin, sheyadua shehu kedei sheyigarshena, that we know that it's just to force him to divorce her, hayazah bedin get meusa la Torah's get. That would be considered a forced get. Afim hu haya maschel begerishin, even if he brought up the topic. Kol shekein hafa, she haisa maschelas, and even all the more so when she's the one who brings it up, she'amar shalot esrata lachtam hotzio min masar, and lo yitain lo get. In a situation where she says she's not going to agree to have him released from jail unless he gives a get, so then that would indeed be a problem under those circumstances. And the reason seems to be the suffix there seems to be because we're not sure that onus mamon is the reason enough to say that his action shouldn't be considered his action. But that it's because of the instruction of the one compelling, Kamaisa Kofa Alma, came into Efshal, Kopanim, Shal Asa Sakini, because it's still possible for him not to make this transaction. The Hagerishin, Vela Hafsid Hamamon, and he's not going to go ahead with it, and he'll lose the money. Velo Dami Kla, Larotsum Lahargo, Mlo Yasa Kini Vagerishin, it's not at all comparable to a situation where somebody wants to kill him. Somebody's going to force you at gunpoint, so you don't have the ability to say no. But if somebody's going to take away a lot of money from you, you still have the ability to say no, so that seems to be the suffix. So normally, when we're talking about a situation, somebody being forced to sell something, so if they're being or to buy something, if they're being coerced monetarily. So there, you could understand that in his heart, he doesn't really want to transfer the property. He's only just going along with it so as not to lose his money. When it comes to a get, you might say that we shouldn't think it's a fake out. Because it's possible that he doesn't love her so much. Kevich chazin and shemakbid al mamon kolkach. Since we see that he cares about the money so much, ad shekasav get, that he's up to willing to write a get. Katam shekas b'schechuv v'tol dami l'onus mamon, because it's not comparable, therefore, to onus mamon. Like a mamon kahad de'uvda de'pardisav lo nifsal b'get al mitam shleyachshav nechshav ma'isav tam zesov b'lekvotus mamon. Okay, fine. So what have we seen so far? So this essentially draws a little bit on Morty's point that maybe there's room to question that if it's the kind of situation where he could freely say, I will take the monetary costs and stay married, and he chooses instead to not be married and to save himself from monetary loss, maybe that should be considered still willing. That should be considered of your own free will. Now, remember I told Shmuley before that he was in good company. So, listen to this next line. U'muchroch zeh l'rabbeinu tam. The idea that maybe there isn't necessarily ones mamon as a problem for get, that seems to be true for Rabbeinu Tam. Shuv Beis Yosef, that Rabbeinu Tam is quoted Beis Yosef, B'Shem Maharik. That's what we discussed last time. Sha'af b'makom shein kofin yecholm ha'bezdin k'shiro and sarech shigaresh. That even a situation when there's no kfiya, when Bezdin sees a reason for a gerishin, that he has to divorce. Sheyigzru be'ela hachamura. I'm sorry, shigzru ba'ala, excuse me, shigzru, that they should make a gzera with a strong curse. I'll call ishvi isha shlo yihu rishayim ledaberimo. That every man and woman should not be allowed to talk with this person, velisa velite, and they shouldn't do business with him, velaharvicho, and to profit him, and lahachilo, lahashkoso, and to feed him, and to give him what to drink, velavoso, levakra b'cholyev, and to accompany him, and to visit him in his sickness. V'od yosifu chomer kirtzonam, and they could add whatever severity they want. Al kol adam im lo yigarish esayal dehazos, since he's not going to divorce this young woman. Shevazein kfiya olav, because that's not called kfiya. Shem yirtza yimtza lo makom, if he wants, he'll find somewhere. V'hu lo yilaka begufo, that he will not be pressed bodily. Mitoch niduyav, zeh anu nesparish me'elav. So then that's not considered to be kfiya. Right? So basically, that's what we discussed last time. The harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam, which don't seem to be a violation of kfiya. So says Reb Moshe about the harchakos to Rabbeinu Tam, shalachara ein lacha kfiya gedolah mizeh. You might think that isn't there tremendous coercion here? There's no greater coercion than that. Shehu garua af meonis mamon rav. That is even worse than great monetary compulsion. Aval who could be arti lehashbatz alibet pesachit shuv la beget batal rak baonish otsa lahachshiv shein ze ma'isav ela kamaisa kof ba'alma. The only time we'd say that the onus passes with the get is when it is so severe that we don't even think it's his action at all. V'zel lo shayech ela k'shi'ef shaloi b'shem ofen, and that only applies when it's impossible for him at all to get out of this. Shelo la'asos, that he shouldn't do what he's being told. Ke ha-mitzvah k'shehu k'sherotzim l'hargo, o k'shenidu ha-bezdin sheshel yachos shilaka baguf b'chol makom shiyah. So when it's so severe that people want to kill him, or that they're going to put him in nidui, so his life is going to be at risk, so he's going to have no choice. Aval k'she'eim an adonos, so when they're not putting him in cheirem, Rak osru b'shvua b'cherem al acherem, they're just forbidding others by dint of a shvua and acherem. Shebekan, in this place, shlo yisuv yitno imo, they shouldn't do business with him, uchidome. And similarly, b'chol harchako shieshlo eitza limtza lamakom. I'm sorry, so harchako shieshlo eitza limtza lamakom acher, that then he has an eitza to find somewhere else, excuse me. Af shehu behefsin mamon v'derech rachok, even though it's going to cost him a lot of money and it's far to get there. Mikol makom kevin shebiado lishkol zek neged zek. Since it's in his possibilities that he could weigh this against that, v'liv chor lasos mash lefanav yoser tov, and he could pick what that which is better in front of him. U'bacher begerushin hu ma'isa atzmo, and he picked the gerushin that's considered to be his own decision. V'lek elach shash ramos. And all there is the concern of some dishonesty. Shabazes over shekevet shalakan and sadly shirak limos and levat lekeni. The yeller ben tam gam begzei gazla ishto shamra shetachsek shigishena nami get kasher behechlet. So according to ben tam, it would also come out that if the woman stole from him and said she's only going to give it if she gets the get, that would also be kasher. Delo karashbetz mistapik bezeh. It's not like the rashbetz has a suffix who had a suffix about this. According to ben tam, would come out that it is totally kosher. But the loketar is getting shasar for the half of the chiyin eich ketar is divrei ben tam. So basically, we'll have to continue this tomorrow to get to one of the major points and to go from here into greater detail into the prenup and the get law. But what Moshe basically just said, it was just like Shmuley at the good company I was saying earlier, that he thinks simply abstaining from doing business with him, that is considered to be monetary compulsion theoretically, because the person's not going to have any business, he's going to be in real trouble. But it still doesn't rise to the level of kviya by a get. We know that it's okay because Rabbeinu Tam said it's okay. So that shows you something about what's considered kviya. That if the individual could decide, I'll take it or leave it, that, and it's already not considered kfiyah, because kfiyah for a get means that the coercion is so overwhelming, it's like you don't really have any say in the action. It's like a maista kof. And here, that's not the case. Here, the compulsion is not so overwhelming, because you could choose this path or that path. So as long as you have any element of decision, that's not going to be considered a get mu'usa. All right, very important statements. The Gemara will pick up with us tomorrow, and we'll see a little bit more about how some of these plans work. All right, to wish you all a wonderful night. Should be only good things.